Welcome to the Life in the City podcast from Antioch Community Church in Northeast Minneapolis, where we explore what it looks like to be a loving family inviting all people into the life-changing way of Jesus Christ. We're glad you're here. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is our next episode of the Life in the City podcast. I'm Coley Wattaja.
And I'm Rachel Love.
And we are back with another guest. We're rocking it with the guests recently. This is pretty great. our very own Ryan Maurer, the worship team. Is your title actually worship team coordinator?
I think it's coordinator, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's not director.
It should be director.
It should be. We're just going to call you the director. Yeah.
But also, more than that, he is probably the most faithful listener of this podcast as well.
The number one fan. In fact, it's quite surreal. I've listened to you guys so much, and to sit here in the same room hearing you do the intro, it's pretty cool, actually. So
I think it was like the very first week that the podcast was supposed to drop. Like, I don't think I dropped it till like 8:30 that morning or like 9 or something. Yeah. And like at like 7:30, Ryan was like, "Where's the podcast?"
I rolled out of bed and it was just like,
"Where is it?
Give me the podcast.
Where is it?"
So now I usually drop it at like 6:30 in the morning. And we do. Not that anybody else would ever listen to it that early, but
for our dozens of listeners.
All right. Hi, Mom.
Yeah. Hi, Dad. Yeah. No, we don't know how many people are really listening because, you know, you get some analytics, but it's not quite clear. So if you are listening and you have feedback, we would love to hear it. You can comment on our Instagram at Antioch Community. Is that what it is?
Antioch Community.
Yeah.
And also podcast@antiochcommunity.org. You can email us that way too.
There you go. Specifically about the podcast. It has its own email address. It's legit. But anyway, I'm just rambling. Ryan, why don't we just start with, just tell us about yourself. Who are you? I know people that call Antioch home know you as the guy with black skinny jeans and a guitar. But beyond that, yeah.
There's really nothing that's else it. To say. That's kind of it.
That is your identity.
Yeah, man. It's always like, maybe we'll get to this later. I started a new job recently and like you had these interview questions. It was always, tell me about yourself. That's always a tough one. But let's see. So yeah, I live here in the Twin Cities with my wife, Monica, and my 1.5-year-old daughter, Nora. And we're also expecting, and we just found out on Friday, so this will be an announcement that it's going to be a boy.
Oh, yes! That's so exciting!
You're here first.
Yes!
On the podcast.
This is like raw emotion right now. For you.
Yes. That's great. Yeah, so we're expecting our second one in like early February or something like that. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. So exciting. Let's see what else. We just bought a house in North St. Paul. We're moving in this coming weekend. So a lot of wow. stuff going on. It's been a busy time, but a fun time.
So you're expecting a new little one. You just started a new job.
Yeah.
You just got a new house. So only a few life transitions happening at one time.
I just decided to throw them all in
one
summer and just get it all over with.
Get it done.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, beyond that, I'm a software engineer. I work for Target. Actually, but ironically, what brought us to the Twin Cities was grad school for me in a totally different field. So we moved up here in 2018. I was going to grad school at Concordia in St. Paul for a doctorate of physical therapy.
Oh.
And about a year into that, I realized that wasn't for me. It's kind of a long story. If anyone's interested, I'd be happy to talk to you about it. But dropped out of that, ended up going to a coding boot camp, and I've been doing like the software development thing for, I guess, the last 2.5-3 years or so.
How long were you on the physical therapy track? Like, was it what you wanted to do in high school? Kind of that.
Yeah,
was
it was
thing?
Actually. So okay. I played sports in high school, played basketball and soccer mostly. Had some injuries as part of that. And through like an online athletic trainer, I was able to rehab from those injuries and get back way faster than I thought I normally would have. So after that, I went to school at University of Wisconsin-La Crosse for athletic training. As part of that, I actually interned with the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
I have a picture,
wow.
If you go back in my Instagram, of me and Aaron Rodgers at one point, which is kind of fun.
Does he look homeless at that point?
No, he doesn't.
Okay, just checking.
This was like 2016, I think, so a little while back. So I was really going hard down the sports medicine path. Was in grad school for physical therapy, like I said. So it was probably a good, I don't know, I mean, 6 years of school and then, you know, just the planning and, you know, applications and all that in high school out of that. So it was, yeah, it was a big life change. Like we'd moved up here for that, where, you know, it was a lot of questioning, like, why are we here? Is this what we're supposed to do? But honestly, like Antioch, we'd been coming to Antioch for a couple of years by the time I decided to leave school. But that was a big encouragement for us to be like, yes, this wasn't in vain. We found this great church home and all these friends here. So that was a big help during that time.
Wow, that's awesome. Sounds like we should hear more about that another time.
That's for great. Sure.
What do you do for fun?
Yeah, for fun. I mean, I keep really busy with a little one at home. So that's a lot of fun, just going to parks with her. And you guys both have young kids, so you guys get it. That keeps you busy. And it is fun. But like, when I'm not doing that, I'm a huge sports fan. Love watching sports. So Wisconsin sports, Green Bay Packers, Milwaukee Bucks, all that. So last night I was watching the Packers game and like playing music. That's probably like the obvious one to people. That's is most visible, I suppose, on a Sunday morning.
And more than just playing, do you create music as well?
Yeah, I do. So I also create music under the name Zakar. It's Z-A-K-A-R on Spotify, all caps.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
It's like instrumental music. You might, I used it to like study too. There's artists similar to the kind of music I make in like high school and college. I would listen to that just as I'm studying. So I'm like, I want to try my hand at making some of this. So yeah, I have like a few EPs out on Spotify and yeah, so check it out.
Nice, give them a follow.
That's awesome. So before we get into like the actual Antioch worship stuff, that's only a tiny portion of what you do. I mean, we talked about your work, like that's your 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
And then there's family and everything else.
Right.
How many hours do you work for Antioch? I don't even know. Is it like?
I think it's technically 8.
Okay. That's such a specific number.
I'm pretty sure it's 8. We don't really track it, which it kind of averages out to 8. Some weeks are less, some weeks are more.
Christmas, depends Easter, or not.
Yeah. Depends on what's going on. But yeah, it's like 8 hours.
Yeah.
But you specifically coordinate like the worship teams, but also the production side of things, like overseeing, like obviously scheduling, but almost like our service production as a whole to make sure things run smoothly. We can hear things that we need to hear. We can see things that we need to see. Yeah. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah. I'm actually pretty hands off with that. Like I'm technically in charge of those guys. Like I do the scheduling, but they do so much of that just on their own without anything from me, especially Coley's husband, John, is like super instrumental, especially with the visuals and the live stream and getting all that set up and running. But yeah, technically I am in charge of that too. So maybe I get the blame if something goes wrong. I'll just
be the hitman. They get the credit, you get the blame.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Good leadership. what I'm hearing is like you have a lot of different sides of your brain that you use in different ways. Like you're a musician, but you're a software engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about worship, it can be really easy to hear like, oh yeah, it's an expression of worship. Like I use my creative gifts as an expression of worship. But how does the rest of your life, like software engineering, it's a job. You like it, but it's a job. How do you see that as an expression of your faith or of an expression, an act of worship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, what you just said there, like it is an act of worship. We can get into this later, but I almost don't like that word worship has just like, you hear that word and what comes to mind is just singing, you know, worship music on Sundays or listening to it on K-Love or something like that. But it's so much more, right? It's really like your whole life. I think it's in Romans where it talks about like just that, like worship is just like your act of obedience and sacrifice to the Lord, just like with everything you do. So yeah, the job is definitely that for me. I've been working from home for the last 2.5 years. I've been in the office once just last week, as a matter of fact. It was the first time I did that. So it's been a little bit different to try and think about how can I worship through my work? There's obviously the aspect of like doing everything as if unto the Lord. And that's something I certainly try and do. But even those relationships have definitely been a little tougher to build online. But, you know, I think just little things, just like talking to coworkers and asking them about their own lives and building those relationships. It's a little harder remotely, but you can still do that. And hopefully, you know, maybe get into some spiritual conversations at some point. But sometimes I think even just being a listening ear for people, especially there's a stereotype of software engineers that we're very, very introverted. And it's definitely true. And I've run into some people who are honestly quite depressed and quite lonely during this COVID time. Like they live by themselves. They would go into the office and see people. And this isn't just software developers. There's a lot of people like this over the last few years. And they're just kind of having a hard time being at home. So I think just being able to ask them about their lives and talk with them and be a friend for them, that can be an act of worship and showing compassion, loving people as God would love them and trying to see them that way. So
yeah. Definitely. And I love that you touched on that worship is more than just song. It's what you do in work even, because I think we mm-hmm. see even back to like creation. Initially, we see Adam and Eve being given the opportunity to work as a form of worship, but then also participate in this relationship where they walked and talked with God as well. And that's really what we do through song as well. We mm-hmm. kind of talk to the Lord in one aspect, but then we also work like you're doing and working so that for the betterment of our world and for the betterment of others. And you're seeing even an opportunity to better the community that you're living in by being able to bring relationship into that work as mm-hmm. well. So that's great. So given that you've been learning and all this about worship and what it is and what it can be, take us back to, you know, what has been your experience with worship, even as like you came to know Christ. Tell us a little bit about that and then what you've been learning about how to reflect back and how to use song as a form of worship in your own life.
How much time do we have? that's there's a lot there. That's a good question though. So yeah, I'll just go back to the beginning, I guess. So I grew up in rural Wisconsin, a little town called Viroqua. But if you know where La Crosse is, some people do. Viroqua is a little bit south of there. So grew up a pastor's kid there. And in terms of my faith and coming to know the Lord, I think I was probably about 6 years old. There are these plays that they had put on, something called The Keys. Have you guys heard of that? Maybe it was just a local thing. Keys basically, I don't think so. It was Keys, basically
that
just
was like a magazine, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. It was just a play about the gospel, the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. But there's like this, the kind of the climax of the play is this big thing at the end where it must be the Jesus character like literally like takes the keys to death and Hades from the Satan character. It's like this epic moment and music is playing and everyone's cheering.
Was it set to a song by Lifehouse?
Could have been.
You're having a flashback?
I am, to like high school youth group of like drama. We had like a drama team and we would do like different things set to music. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, it might. We'll have to Google this later and try. I'm sure it's on YouTube or something.
Somebody find it and send it to us.
There's this play, and afterwards on the way home, I just remember asking my dad and my parents some more questions about, I don't even remember the questions I was asking, honestly, just that I was curious about some things. I think it was that Sunday in church when my dad was preaching, you know, kind of prayed the sinner's prayer. And that's when I think I was saved at that point. I think I was old enough to have a level of understanding of my sin and what Jesus had done for me in dying for my sins. So I grew up in that church, that same church my whole life. In terms of like getting into worship ministry, I was probably about 12 years old and had just started picking up the guitar a little bit. And it was an electric guitar, actually. And, you know, if we go back that long ago, electric guitars in church were like still a little bit taboo, like drums.
You were a rebel.
Yeah. So I was the first electric guitar the church had ever seen. I was just strumming like super, super clean chords, just playing along with whatever the worship leader was playing. So I just kind of played guitar all throughout high school in this church. I actually never led anything till it was in college. I was at this Bible camp, Living Waters Bible Camp. I kind of describe it as like, so Chaminade is like, you know, this big Christian camp in Minnesota. Living Waters is what Chaminade is to Minnesota. It is to like Southwest Wisconsin. So it's kind of a well-known Bible camp in that area. And the guy, I was going to help out lead worship, but just again, kind of just play guitar like I've always done. And the guy was like, Ryan, he's like, you should, you know, just lead the whole thing. It was a boys camp, like 7th through 9th grade boys. I was like, nah, I don't, like, I don't sing. I'm not going to do that. He's like, oh yeah, by the end of the week, you'll just be done. I'm like, okay. I didn't think I would. Somehow, I don't remember how exactly, but there I was like 2 days in.
You were voluntold.
Just, yeah, just kind of doing the thing. And I never really like sang before. And it was pretty rough, I remember. Like when you're just starting off trying to like learn to play guitar and sing, it can be hard to find the right, like what key to start the song. Even though you're playing the chords, it's like, what note am I actually supposed to hit here? So in multiple songs, I'm pretty sure I led the whole thing.
So you don't want to sound like a middle school boy as you're singing yeah. it in your voice that cracks.
Maybe that's why it worked, yeah. because we all just sounded horrible.
Everyone's ranges was 5 notes.
Exactly. Yeah, so many songs are just like in the totally wrong key. It was pretty bad, but you know, it was a good place to learn because the stakes are really low, right?
Yeah.
So after that, just started leading worship in that church that I grew up in. And even in, so I went to college in La Crosse, so it wasn't super far away. So I'd come home on weekends still and lead too. So really kind of, I guess you could say, cut my teeth in that setting. It was a great place to learn, great mentors for me, people have been leading for much longer and, you know, much more experienced in the faith than I was. So it was a really, really great experience. And then honestly, my next time, you know, I had a couple years off then I was in grad school. My next time really truly leading was coming to Antioch.
Oh, wow.
I guess the rest of the story everyone here has kind of seen. But yeah, it's cool. I'm so thankful for that. That guy, his name was Keith, who kind of forced me into this way, because it's something I really enjoy now. And like, I don't think I'd be sitting here if it wasn't for that guy. So really thankful for him.
Hmm. That's awesome. I love stories too of people that were just like, no, you should just do this. And yeah. It's a low stakes thing for him. It's low stakes for you in the moment, but it right. sets off a trajectory of a whole life, yeah. which is awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And totally what like, I think discipleship is. You know, it's like, it doesn't have to be all these major moments, but it's these little opportunities that you, that people just take. And sometimes you step up and you know, if you'd fallen flat on your face after that week, like, all right, some 7th graders thought it wasn't the best music ever, whatever. You know,
exactly. Like, who cares? Would have forgotten about it by now.
Will not remember yeah. it. But yeah, that's awesome. So as you've come into Antioch then, and you know, you were on the team for a while and now you're leading it, and talk big picture a little bit. Like, what is your general like philosophy of worship, and how does quote unquote worship ministry, what is that? Why do we call it that? You know? And yeah, what's your like general philosophy of this whole idea of worship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I keep saying the term worship ministry, but I've even talked to like, oh, we should change the name to be like praise team. Some churches call it that. Cause like, I really do think there's been harm done by that. Cause like I mentioned this earlier, we just think of worship as singing. And in fact, if you look in the Bible, rarely, if ever, is that word worship tied with song. It's always something like praise and like praise and worship. Those two words are, you know, there's a lot of overlap between those definitions.
There's a lot of action tied to worship. Mm-hmm. So maybe even like thinking through like, yes, when we give our tithes and offerings, that's an act of worship on Sundays as well.
Yeah,
there's lots of things absolutely. We do that are acts of worship outside of singing.
Mm-hmm. And like, we'll say that, we'll be like, oh, we're going to worship through prayer, through like preaching of the word. But I think that's, we've just been kind of, those of us who's grown up in the church have been just kind of conditioned to think of it as that. So I'll get off my high horse now.
We'll be looking for a title change and updating the website tell us. Yeah,
totally. No, I think it's not a high horse at all. I think there's all these things in culture that like we don't recognize that we've kind of accepted until we start to recognize it. So even, and we were just talking about this the other day about announcements. Like, we don't just want it to be a billboard, like or a series of drive-bys, you know, messages that, oh, by the way, you should know this. Like, no, this is actually... How are announcements on Sunday an act of worship? Because they are sharing what's going on in the life of this family. You know, we're celebrating, we're gathering.
Like family life news and celebrations together instead of just calling it announcements.
And I know you and I, and I think the guys too, like try to make announcements communicated in that way. Like, okay, we're going to praise God through announcements now, and then we're going to transition to praising God through singing, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is, even so, you still hear the word worship and you're like, okay, it's songs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so when it does come to this, to praise ministry, mm-hmm. Yeah, what's your general philosophy around that? Or how do you think about it?
Yeah, so I think, so maybe we'll just frame it as like singing at this point, because I think mm-hmm. that's really what it is. Like if you look in scripture, I forget the actual number. I think it's like 400 times or something singing is mentioned. Often it's like a command from God, like sing praises, you know, Old Testament, it's even in the New Testament. And singing, I mean, clearly it's something that God loves, right? Because it's mentioned so many times. But I think like there's just such a practical application for our lives as like individuals and as a church. And I've always said that singing in like the church context, I guess, and really even with secular songs too, but it's just our emotional connection to the truth, right? Because God made music, he made song, he made us, and he made our hearts and our minds to respond to music and to singing in a certain way. And I think it draws us closer to him. It draws us closer to one another. So I think that's one of the big things. If you think about singing too, like, I think it helps us to remember truths and words better. Mm-hmm. So if you think about, so many times we'll use it as a way to help us remember things like ABCs, right? Sing the ABCs. Like I've remembered that since I was 3 years old. I never sing it anymore, except when I need to like get to W. I'm like, where is W at in the thing?
You're alphabetizing something, yeah.
But like, there's something so powerful, like with our memories and singing. So on Sundays when we gather together mm-hmm. and we sing these truths, of who God is, of what he's done for us. I think it just, we remember them and we internalize those things differently than if we were just hearing Andy or someone else preach mm-hmm. the word to us. So I guess, yeah, that's kind of a, you know, big, one of the motivations I think for singing is just that kind of emotional connection to, that it gives us to the truth of God.
Right. So, go ahead.
I hear you saying it's almost like we're gospeling ourselves every time mm-hmm. we're getting together. And I know we are very familiar with the fact that we sing as adults in the service, and we have kids with us in that too. But also, just want to shout out our kidsmen leaders too, because they're doing totally. Songs with the kids too. Mm. And I think we are all testaments of the fact that those songs will stick with you for your whole life sometimes. And I know both of you do this with your kids too, because I've watched Ryan, your daughter Nora, and even like on your little list of like, how to put her to bed, you guys had like, she sings Jesus Loves Me before she goes to bed. Yeah. And Dax, I think, sang the same song to me today. He also sang Romans 8:1-2 to me through music today. And I was like, this little 2-year-old has now memorized like passages of scripture. And so whether it's,
to be fair, he doesn't quite have articulated the word condemnation, but you know, he's got a lot of it. Yeah.
He'll get it. But I think it's amazing how even from like childhood mm-hmm. to adulthood, those things stick with us. And I'm sure you guys are all testaments too of like the songs that we listen to in middle school that it's like, why do I still remember the words to this song back from like sixth grade that we listened to in this person's basement?
Because now like, it's just playing overhead in Target.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm transported.
Right. But songs stick with you in a way that other things don't. And, you know, mm-hmm. there's different senses. Obviously, some smells will bring back memories, but some songs will have deep emotional connections. And I love that you talked about music is almost like a way for us to emotionally and relationally connect to God. And he mm-hmm. designed it that way. And I think it's beautiful.
So what I was going to ask you is like in from the perspective of the congregation, why is it important to sing with the band?
Yeah, because you guys sound great on Sundays.
As opposed
and like,
to...
what if I can't sing? I like to listen or just watch, read the words, stand silently. And I think like all three of us are musical. And so we kind of have the bend toward like, of course we'd sing. But like not everybody either enjoys that or thinks they can or feels like they have anything to contribute. Like, why does it, I think we've sort of answered it, but like, why does it matter that the congregation sings?
Yeah, I think we have kind of answered, but there's, I think, another direction we can go. I think it's mentioned multiple times. I think one is in Colossians, where it talks about singing to one another. So not only are we singing to God, as he's commanded many times in Scripture, but there's this aspect of we're singing to one another, which is kind of a weird way to think about it. It's not something like I'm just going to sing to you, Coley. That'd be pretty strange, right?
We've now entered into the musical portion of our podcast.
Yes, just burst into song.
Get the guitars. This aspect of singing to one another that I think can build each other up. So I think about, say I'm sitting across from someone, next to someone who I know is struggling with something, maybe they're struggling to see God working in their life, or they're going through a hard time. And like yesterday, we're saying, "Great is thy faithfulness." Mm-hmm. I think it can be so encouraging for me as a congregant to see them singing that song and encouraging themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the reasons that it's really helpful if we're all. I'll participate. I think it brings us closer together. I think it unifies the church, because we're singing these truths that have been true. They're true for us. They've been true for people for all time. You know, in theory, if we're singing the right songs, you know, they're true for all time. And so I think it can just be a really unifying thing. Just look around the room and everybody is singing, again, "Great is thy faithfulness, great are you, Lord," together proclaiming who God is and who he's always been.
You said there, you kind of brushed by it, but if we're singing the right songs, so how do you choose songs?
Yeah.
How do you decide what is our canon, so to speak, of music?
Yeah. Do you just like think, oh, Caleb does this, we should do it too? Like, what is your philosophy 40, there?
Yeah. I don't know if we do any top 40 stuff right now, It's tough. It honestly feels sometimes like, I don't have a good analogy for it, but it's like digging through, I don't want to be charitable to songwriters, but like digging through to trash to find the good things, right? Because a lot of the songs you hear on the radio, I don't think are the best for a group of 100 people of all different ages and musical experiences and interests and abilities to be singing on a Sunday morning. So for me, it's just, I try to keep up with the latest and greatest, but also look back at some older stuff and older hymns and just see, okay, what is going to be good for our group? Cause there's a lot of new songs that come out. There's like, we're just not going to do this. Sometimes you need to give my wife a shout out, a new song, maybe not a new song, like in terms of its release date, but a new one to me, like, oh my God, we should do this. I get all excited. She's like, no, Ryan, it's not going to work. Like, I get too into it sometimes. I like lose the perspective of maybe someone just in the congregation. So she's really helpful for that. But yeah, in terms of like just a little more objectively speaking, what I look for, there's really two things. First and foremost, it has to be something that's theologically sound and accurate, right? We don't want to be singing heresy. It's like a really low bar to clear. secondly, this is something I still work on myself, is I want us to be singing a wide variety of themes, I think, too. So not just these like really celebratory songs where everything is great and we're praising God. There's definitely, we need those songs. But I think, and this is something I want to try and, talking to myself here, something I want to try and doing more is more songs about like suffering, or songs about lament. Those maybe darker places of our Christian walk that we don't often sing about, but I think can be really powerful too. Number two or number three, I think melody, like it has to be a catchy song. Like we mentioned, like
level. Yeah.
The reason ABC sticks with us is because there's a certain catchiness to it, right? So it has to be something that's going to stick with you, that people can sing along to, something that's easy to, you should be able to sing these, ideally by the end of, by the time we get to the last chorus of a song you've never heard before, the hope is that you'd be able to already kind of pick up on it and start singing along to it. So really kind of those three. It has to, theologically sound. It ideally should we shouldn't be singing the same themes for four songs every Sunday and, you know, 52 weeks a year, and then something that's catchy that hopefully people can can sing along with us on.
Nice. That's awesome. I love that.
So if you, I heard you say you want a lot of these songs to be able to be sung by people in many different contexts or demographics within our church family. And it makes me think of our church mission statement that we strive to be a loving family, inviting all people into the life-changing way of Jesus Christ. So how do you see worship through singing being a part of that bigger mission of Antioch, of being a loving family, inviting all people into the life-changing way of Jesus Christ?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think worship ministry can unfortunately sometimes hinder that. Like if you walk in on a Sunday and it's dark and there's smoke, and I mean, we're never going to do this, but you've probably all been there or heard of these, and there's a place for that. And it's not all bad, but I think it can be so good where it doesn't become welcoming to somebody. It can also be so bad where ever just you're super distracted. Like, why am I here? Like the kid's like, Mom, can we go home? So I think doing worship that is excellent to a certain degree, that is contextually appropriate to their church and where you're at, can be a way to make people, you know, we don't always want people to feel comfortable necessarily, but I think if you're a new person coming in, you certainly don't want to be alienated instantly by the first
discomfort the is first also not note. The goal.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
If you're going to be uncomfortable, I hope it's because of the gospel, not because of our musicality. Yes,
exactly. being challenged by some theme or something. I think that, you know, back to the picking songs thing, sometimes we will compromise isn't the right word, because we're still singing good ones, but we will sing. I will literally look at the top songs that are being sung at churches across the country. I think like Goodness of God, King of Kings, I would probably do these anyways, but those are good ones because in theory, if you've been in any church context, you've probably heard those. They're huge songs. Everyone across the world is singing these. So hopefully something like that would help you feel more comfortable and more at home if you're just checking out our church.
One thing I appreciate is you have really, in a good way, limited the number of songs we choose from. Mm-hmm. I'm quoting someone else, but I'll keep it anonymous just because I don't know who listens. Because it's not necessarily a bad thing. But someone once said to me, "Yeah, that worship leader really takes seriously the sing a new song to the Lord part of the command," because they were picking new songs like every single week. This was not at Antioch, but. You know, what that means is that you never learn them and you can never like sing them freely. You're just constantly thinking about learning words. And so I've really appreciated how you have brought, you systematically bring in new songs, but also keep it, you have a limit to like, no, let's keep familiar there. Let's bring in new as is needed or important. But yeah, it's not this constantly learning a new song and a new melody and a new, you know.
That's like the Jeremiah 29:11 thing, but like for worship leaders, ripped out of context.
No song.
I mean, all these like worship leader groups on Facebook, or people are always bringing up that verse. And it is important, I think, to have a smaller set list that especially, I mean, because I think we'd probably agree at like the church, like our gathering is primarily for like believers, right? And for our own fellowship, we want to be extremely welcoming to outsiders. I also want our own people to be able to sing every song with confidence and have it stick with them. And so, I'm glad that's been helpful.
For sure.
And I can see you've cast that vision well, because while you are the worship and productions coordinator, you're over the team as a whole, you also have leaders that you have set within your team as well who lead on Sundays, like
one of them is in this room.
Yeah, Coley Wanaja.
I'm the pull in case of emergency leader.
It's been more emergencies last couple of years than we would like.
Hey, that's all right. That's all right. I'm good in a pinch.
You're good, period. But
Louisa Noring, Ava O'Rourke, even James Inla. We've had people who from within our church family, you have allowed to be on stage leading our church family in song, and it doesn't always need to be you, which I appreciate, because you're inspiring others to see the ministry, the mission, the vision, and how they can encourage others to worship as well. So knowing that you have put together some teams, but you know that there are more giftings within our church family of people that could use their gifts to bless the church through song. What would somebody need to do if they wanted to get involved in our music ministry, praise ministry,
yeah,
or productions ministry?
Yeah, so like if you're listening and you play an instrument, or maybe you sing, it doesn't have to be,
or maybe someone in your household has a skill that is maybe just not being used.
Yeah, totally. Skills. In fact, I'll answer this by telling a story about how I got involved. So like I had played for, like I mentioned, I grew up playing worship teams for many years. And I came here, I saw people on stage, and I was like, these guys are way too good. I was like, I'm not going to like be able to do, because we did, and we still do, but you know, some really talented people here. But even me, who, you know, a lot of experience, I still felt kind of intimidated by that. So if you're listening, just want to let you know, don't feel intimidated. We'll really take and can work with within reason. A lot of different skill levels, right? And even if you don't feel like you're totally ready for the worship team, we could still, there's different resources and stuff I have that I could give you and work with you to get up to the point you would feel confident playing on teams. But yeah, just come up to me Sunday morning after service if you're more comfortable with email or something. I think my email's on the website.
Ryan.Maurer.
I'm so bad at checking it, so that's why
maybe antiochcommunity.org.
Just email Rachel. Just email the podcast.
Yeah, Rachel will Slack me, and then we'll go from there. But yeah, we're always looking for more people. It's a great way to get involved in the church. Over the years, I've found that it kind of becomes its own little community group in some ways. It's kind of your own little tribe. I've gotten to know some of my best friends in Antioch are people who I've met on the worship team and serving alongside each other. So yeah, we'd love to have anyone else.
Yeah, well, so when it comes to, there's the team and then there's the worship leader, because like the team gets told what to play and how to play it for the most part. But what do you think is like, let's say, essential? If you could boil it down to like, there's a lot of things that are nice to have as a worship leader or to be. But what do you think are the most important things that a worship leader, like you or me or Ava, or like, what are you looking for in a potential worship leader? Or what do you think a worship leader needs to cultivate skill-wise, character-wise, in themselves to really do the job well?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny because it's what I've thought about before, but recently I feel like it's just been like, oh, at this point, I'll just take, you know, if anyone... Right, because we're always looking for more people. But yeah, that's a good thing to think about. I think, I mean, first and foremost, they have to have a relationship with the Lord, right? I think that's obvious. You know, there's a certain musical skill level that's always ideal. I think like a simple way of thinking about it, like if you feel you could just with yourself and your instrument just lead on a Sunday morning, you could probably lead a team as well and play along with them. Yeah, there's like administrative things that are helpful to have too, because you gotta like be the one to pick the songs and put them in planning center in a timely manner and call out who's leading the songs.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
The bane of Rachel's existence.
No, I'm kidding. You're usually very good at it.
I try. What else? Yeah, I mean, I think those are probably the big ones. You know, it's an area that I am not super strong, and I would say is just it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think it is helpful sometimes to have a more charismatic personality up there. It can be distracting, but sometimes it is nice to have like people like, I think I'll call out Carrie Easta does a great job with this. I've always admired how like expressive she is in singing, but not distracting. I think it just really encourages people in the congregation. That's just not something even in private. Just not how I'm wired. Yeah. So I think that's always like a nice to have.
Yeah.
If people are a little bit more expressive in that way. So.
Nice. All right. Here's my final question for you. I know how you often minister to our church through leading music and song. That's very visible. But how do you, as a member of Antioch, feel cared for or ministered to by the rest of Antioch? What are ways that you feel like you are ministered to by our church family?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, by the two of you in this room, I'd probably start with, like, Coley is our community group leader, her and her husband, John, you guys. That's maybe one of the main ways. And I think that's just kind of Antioch's mission. Like, the community groups are a very mm-hmm. core of that. And it's been a great experience being in her group and being in fellowship with people that way. I think through what you've done, Rachel and Matt, kind of leading our ministry team leaders. So we would meet, I think we used to meet monthly, maybe it'll go down now. But you know, just sharing devotional thoughts and encouraging us in and not only our personal walks to the Lord, but also in our leadership role at church has been really great. And you know, just also the normal stuff like sermons on Sundays and fellowshipping with other believers has been great. So like I said, when I left physical therapy school, I was kind of questioning, you know, why did we move 3 hours away from family to come up here? And really like this church we kind of came back to as like an anchoring point as to a reason why God has led us here despite, you know, a big career change along the way. So yeah, really thankful for you both and this whole church.
Well, thank you very much.
That was not a question fishing for compliments.
No, it wasn't. It was very, very thoughtful. Thank you.
I will say, as a worship leader, I think one thing you've done, and we've already kind of talked about it, but you have a great sense of the communal aspect of worship. It's not performance. It's not just, you know, a show or whatever. But one of the little technical things that you've done that has aided in that is, well, you're great with the organizational stuff. So like, you got us in-ear monitors, which this is all inside baseball. So if you don't play instruments, I don't know if this will mean anything, but the difference between having in-ear monitors versus these boxes on the floor that yell at you, that you then have to ask the person in the back to keep changing, and people share and you have to like disagree on what is needed. And now we have them in our ears, and it's amazing. We can control it ourselves. Praise God for technology. But what you've also added is an audience mic, because the downside of in-ear mics is that you then get like you're in your own little box. You don't hear the group. And then when you added this that audience mic, there's this tiny little mic next to the beam that the leader stands next to, and it faces out into the congregation. And that mic feeds the congregational singing into the band's ears. It is one of the channels that we can control. Did you even know this, Rach?
I knew it only because there was one week that I think my husband and I and our 6-month-old daughter sat towards the front of the auditorium, and I think our daughter's screeching / singing might have made it into those in-ear monitors for the worship team. Yeah. And so then I told Joel, we should sit a little bit farther back each week so they don't just hear Abigail's wailing.
That's hilarious.
Sometimes the kids in front will like drop a toy really loud. It's like, boom, it's like right there in your brain.
That's funny. My kid just steals it and starts to sing Twinkle Twinkle every single time we're here.
Yeah, my daughter will walk up to me like, da, right in our ears.
Oh, man. Okay.
No, but I do love that.
But it does make a difference. I mean, like, I used to just like use one ear so that I could hear the group, you know, but then you sacrifice the whole benefit. But to be able to hear the congregation sing back, I think is just such a gift when you're on stage too.
Yeah. It's been really helpful for people who may not like totally understand. It's like, imagine just being on stage with like earplugs in. That's basically what it sounds like. You really can't hear people singing a whole lot. You hear yourselves, but that's about it. So yeah, I was meaning to add that for a while, and I think it's been really helpful. Some of my most favorite times leading have been since we've added that, because I can actually hear people singing, which is the whole point of what we're doing, right? Otherwise, it just feels like we're back to the live stream only days, which are we would not like to go back to. So yeah, it's been great. I'm glad it's been helpful for you, Coley.
Well, hey, this has been awesome. Thank you, Ryan, for sticking around. We're doing this in the evening because he has a real job. but this has been great. Again, if anybody wants to get involved in worship ministry, reach out to any of us. Grab Ryan on a Sunday morning. Show up on a Sunday morning with an instrument. We can probably figure it out. I don't know. and we'd love to get you guys involved as well. With that, I think we will see you all next week.
Have a great week, Antioch.
Jesus will read the Bible. This has been the Life in the City podcast, brought to you by Antioch Community Church in Northeast Minneapolis. Join our worship service at 10 a.m. on Sundays in the Waterbury Building, or contact us at podcast@antiochcommunity.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.